You were talking, George, before the break about the cashless society.
Yeah.
And if you think about what that entails, we're already one level abstracted from money. You know, money used to be gold coin, silver coin. It used to be things of value. And then it turned into paper, which on the face of it really doesn't have any intrinsic value. And then it kind of shifted over to credit cards. And, you know, if you can think back to when we were kids, I remember when I was a child, people didn't have credit cards. It was a big deal when I graduated college. I had to, you know, fill out this big, long application and wait a week to be approved. And, you know, it really, the whole credit card economy is very new. And yet, in just the span of, say, 20 years or even less, it's come to the point where even kids now have credit
cards. And it's still screwed up. This big story the last few weeks about this company that now Visa apparently is jumping off, who had their information stolen. 40 million people have their credit card information stolen.
Well, and that's because these credit cards are, they're simply numbers floating around. And in fact, that lack of security is what's going to drive, I believe, the push towards a credit card being combined with authentication. So not only will you be buying and selling with a number, the credit card number, but you'll also have to have some way, some biometric, some form of authentication. You know, there's a city in Texas where the police department told all of the businesses in the city to take fingerprints anytime they take a credit card payment. And they actually distributed little inkless fingerprint pads that wouldn't leave a stain on people's fingers and encouraged every business to require people to put their fingerprint on the back of their credit card slips. And it was for exactly that reason, to discourage that kind of fraud. So what better way to do that than to have some form of physical object or physical authentication method associated with your body? And that's where you start getting into things that actually look quite surprisingly like the biblical prediction that was made 2,000 years ago about the mark of the beast.
Tell me about that prediction.
Let me tell you, and by the way, before I do this, I run, as you know, a national consumer organization. All of our RFID information is online at our website at spychips.com. What I'm about to say, I'm actually going to say more as a private citizen than as the director of Caspian, because we are not a Christian organization per se. We welcome people across the board. I personally come to this issue, though, as a Christian, and I've spoken publicly about my views on this. In fact, on this program, in fact. But let me read a passage from the Bible so everyone, Christian and non-Christian alike, can get a sense of what we're talking about here. This comes from the last book of the Holy Bible. It's a book called Revelation, which talks about the apocalypse, or the period leading up to the end of time, all the way through to the end of time, and the return of Christ to the earth. And the passage that brings up both the mark of the beast and 666 is in the chapter 13 of Revelation. If you've got your Bible, you can open it up and check it out. It's the last three sections of that chapter 13. It's 16 through 18. And it says this, "Also it causes all..." Now, by "it" here, we're referring to a beast. And the beast, some people call the beast the Antichrist. Some people refer to it simply as the beast. But essentially, we've got some power that has taken over, a political power on earth, that shows tremendous physical power, but also exerts political and economic power. And it says here, "And it," the beast, "causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, both free and imprisoned, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that none can buy or sell unless he has the mark, that is, the name of the beast or the number of its name." Then it tells us, "This calls for wisdom. Let him who has understanding reckon the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. So there's your passage. That's the piece that talks about a time when you will not be able to buy or sell unless you have this mark or this number or this name. And it really does sound like a very early 2,000 year ago prediction of an authentication system.
Yes.
So it's not just payment, but there's also an element of, we need to authenticate that you have taken this mark. And throughout that passage, it explains that the mark is actually coupled with worship of the beast, that people are required to both worship the beast and take the mark, and that the people who refuse to do that are beheaded and imprisoned and punished.
Strange parallels.
Yeah, well, and, you know, it's funny because for Christians, for thousands of years, of course, 2,000 years since this prediction was made, have really tried in vain to understand it. You know, few people know this, but Sir Isaac Newton, the gentleman who discovered gravity or first wrote it up, Isaac Newton was actually a Christian who devoted over 1 million words to trying to decipher this one passage, to looking through Revelation and really trying to understand it. The problem was back in, you know, the time when he was living, there really wasn't a way to comprehend, first of all, identifying everyone on the planet, great and small, rich and poor, free and imprisoned. They didn't even really know the limits of the physical earth throughout much of history. And even then, there are people living in jungles and mountains and deserts that you couldn't find. We now have the ability to pinpoint every human being on planet Earth. And in fact, in a recent National Geographic article, they actually talked about how we've done exactly that. There are no more, as far as we know, uncontacted tribes. So we've now identified everyone on the planet. The second piece that was incomprehensible through all those years is the notion that you could have a number to buy and sell. You know, people could buy things on credit, but the credit was associated with their name.
Right.
And even if it was associated with their number, George, the number wasn't the payment. The number simply recorded the fact that you owed them money, and then you had to go in and give them money.
That's right. You were who you were.
So it's really only been since the late 1960s, early 1970s, that we've kind of moved towards this use of numbers for payment at all. And of course, in the last 5-10 years, I mean, you can go on websites now and you can't even make a purchase unless you have a credit card.
That's true.
So we're moving towards this total use of numbers to buy and sell. And then of course the other piece that we're seeing is now you're actually beginning to couple these things with a mark on the body. And it's interesting, there's another parallel. There's a trade company or a trade organization called AIM. They AIM Global. They do. They work with a lot of these industries to try to help them come up with automatic identification strategies. And they were asked by Boeing a while back to cook up a mark that would indicate the presence of these RFID tags on Boeing, you know, 747 aircraft. And the problem that Boeing was having is that because these tags are, you know, for all intents and purposes, they're invisible, they can't be seen. If you aim a reader device at a 747 and you want to find out if there's, you know, a part in there with an RFID tag on it and you don't get a read back, you don't know if you're not getting a read because your reader's broken or you've got the wrong frequency. So what they wanted was a visual symbol, an actual mark that would go on those different parts so that if you didn't get a read, you'd know something was wrong. And so they put some of the brightest minds together and used all kinds of different symbol strategies. And they finally developed something that they call the mark. It's actually called the RFID mark.
Why would they call it that?
Well, you know, it's funny because I was actually there at the unveiling of this thing at a press conference last summer in Chicago. And this was the first worldwide announcement of this thing. And after they finished up, I know the folks at this organization who made the announcement, I piped up and I said, "Hey, folks, do you really want to call it the mark? You know, there's a lot of
were they that stupid, Catherine?"
Well, you know, these are the same folks that called their companies, you know, Alien and Technology and Matrix. So, but, you know, I said to them, "Do you really want to call it the mark?" And it's funny the response I got. There were two gentlemen there making this announcement. The first one turned white. And I got the, you know, I'm thinking to myself, that's probably the result of 12 years of Sunday school there coming to the surface.
Right.
The other guy just kind of shrugged his shoulders and it rolled right off his back. But the first guy was funny. For the whole rest of the press conference, he kept saying, "Well, this mark, I mean the symbol."
He tried to change it, huh?
He tried to change it right on the spot. And sure enough, when they came out with the final formal documentation on this thing a couple weeks later, they had literally called it the mark. And not only that, but there was a little TM after it that they'd even trademarked calling this thing the mark.